Again, I'm Dan Gibbons from City Club. Welcome back to City Club. It's a busy week here. It's been a busy year, and we're not even done with 1 month. Some of you got a note from me this morning. I think all of you, our list of 20,000. I don't know if you read in between the lines, but what I mentioned was that we have incredible programs. We've had six this year to date, and they've all been sold out with wait lists. We have five more on the schedule, and they're all sold out with wait lists. Phil Clement just yelled from table number one, front and center, bigger room. And to that, politely, I say no. And I have a reason for that. In our board, we've talked about this. You all are the cream of the crop of the Chicago civic scene, you know, from business to philanthropy to public sector and elected officials. When you're in this room and you're having these discussions with 250 or so, 287, I think we squeezed in today, it's a lot more meaningful, and it's a level playing field. You can all talk to each other. You can all talk to the speaker. If we had a room of 500, I don't know that we'd have that same feel. So I'm listening, and I'm hearing from all of you what, you know, what you like, what you don't like. We're off to a pretty good start. But please keep that feedback coming. Keep the ideas coming. There are only so many days of the year that we can have a program. But I think we're good with this size room because I think everybody really wants to interact the way that you all do. And I want you all to go leave here after this with a lunch that you set up for yourselves or with a, you know, a deal that you did in business or something. Who knows? Maybe somebody got an endorsement along the way. Please keep doing what you're doing. And we're so proud here at City Club that you want to be in this room. And also, if you didn't read in between the lines, that message was meant to say, don't text me for a seat. Because I'm just being honest. I'm very honest. There are only so many seats in the room. And a lot of people have my cell number. And we seriously are, as we reimagine City Club, we have different levels of membership. And a lot of people don't even know they're not members. Because if they're on that list, they think they're a member. You're probably not. You'll start to see that that we have wait lists and we take care of the higher level members first. Of course, we need to support this club. We need to keep this going. So those memberships mean something. Thank you for all of that and for being here. This room is full of incredible people, as it always is. And I'm just going to run through a few of who those folks are so you get a good taste if you haven't met some folks around you. Alderman Gil Villegas is here. Illinois Supreme Court Justice Joy Cunningham, welcome back. Cook County Commissioner Bill Lowry is on his way. Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, fresh from Davos. You'll have to talk to her about that. Oak Park Mayor Vicki Skaman is here. Park Superintendent, City Club Speaker Carlos Ramirez Rosa, welcome back. CTA Acting President and most recent City Club Speaker, Nora Learson. If you didn't get in the room for that one, check it out online. It's a great presentation. As is Deb Witzberg. Inspector General Deb Witzberg is with us, who another regular City Club Speaker. Judge Judy Rice is here. Judy, great public servant for so long. Rory Hoskins. Rory's running for office. Mayor, where are you? Back there. Thank you for being here. John Atkinson. I just saw his name today. He must have been a late addition from the State of Illinois Economic Development Corporation. John, thank you. Jessica Caffrey is here from the Land Bank. We're going to have Jessica back talking about the Land Bank soon. Kristen Reynolds from Choose Chicago. Again, another sold-out City Club speaker from very recent. Thank you, Kristen, and her chair, Guy Ciparoni. Of course, Chip, we appreciate you being here and your support. I mentioned World Business. Phil is here. Charles Smith from World Business, I believe, is here. Where's Michael Fosnock? Speaking of Michael's at Clayco. Of course, former World Business, Eleanor Gorski from the Chicago Architecture Center, and Marie St. Germain, I believe, is here. Gila Bronner, Brenda Linkster at Bowie from the Library Foundation. Mark Hall, another great City Club. I could go on and on and on, but I think it's very important for you all to understand who's in this room in the mix of the public sector, private sector, and nonprofit education, you name it. This is where it happens. Keep coming. keep talking to each other, keep moving the city forward. We're all here to hear from one person, and it's going to be an honor for me to be able to sit down with her. She often comes to City Club. Sometimes she sits right there and doesn't speak, and she soaks it in, and she understands the importance of what people are saying up here and brings that back to county government and the Democratic Party, right? So if you would, please join me in welcoming the 35th president of the Cook County Board of Commissioners, Madam President Toni Preckwinkle. You need little introduction.
Go ahead.
Do you want to start with a good afternoon? I didn't do that earlier.
Good afternoon. Thank you all. Before I begin speaking, I want to acknowledge... You're going to give me... All right, go ahead.
I'm kidding.
She's I didn't so, get a chance to say anything. I don't know.
No, please do. She, as I said, she comes so often. She's so comfortable in this room. We love having her. We love having her in the room, but... It's rare to get her up here with sharing thoughts that there's a lot happening. We're going to get to a lot. Yes. Why don't you just start us off with what is top on your mind? Because we could go in 100 different directions today.
Okay. All right. Before I begin, could everybody who's a Cook County staff person or Cook County Health and Hospital System please stand so I can acknowledge you? I want to thank all my staff who are here, and I want to thank Commissioner Gaynor for joining us as well. You know, you can't be an effective leader without a great team, and I've been blessed to have wonderful folks who are willing to work for the county, so I wanted to begin by acknowledging them. I'm a history teacher, and this is an incredible moment in history of the history of this country. And I usually begin by saying that historians are not going to be kind to us in this moment. I think it's important to remember kind of what happened just as Trump was inaugurated. A couple of weeks later, he sued, you may not remember this, but I do. He sued the governor, he sued the mayor, and he sued me, as well as our respective law enforcement officers, alleging that we were, because Chicago's a sanctuary city, Cook County is a welcoming county, the state of Illinois is a welcoming state, that we were interfering with immigration enforcement in this country. And I think he did it to intimidate us, to try to get us to work with ICE and the Border Patrol. And, of course, we refused, defended ourselves in court, and in October, the case was thrown out. And they didn't refile. It was clearly just an intimidation effort, you know. So that's how it began. And then, of course, we in Illinois watched what happened in Los Angeles as they flooded Los Angeles with immigration and Border Patrol folks, and were snatching people off the streets, kidnapping people, just as they subsequently did here, taking parents from their children. And people died in Los Angeles, as one young man unfortunately died at Broadview here. As Commissioner Gaynor well knows, in October of this year, I issued an executive order forbidding ICE and Border Patrol to be on our property in Cook County, to be in our facilities, to be in our courthouses, to be in our parking lots. But, of course, we couldn't keep them off the streets. And you all saw on the television news every night what was happening. And it was heartbreaking. What particularly sticks in my mind is the family that was taken from Grant Park and the girl and her doll. We're not in a good place. And what I usually say is it's the obligation of all of us in the ways that we're able to resist in this moment, to speak up, to stand up, to defend our neighbors and our friends. We want to be proud of the work that we've done and the way in which we've carried ourselves in this moment when our grandchildren asked us what we did at this time, right? So... And by the way, let me just say something in defense of immigrants. I always say, this is part of my standard stump speech. America's a great nation because people came from all over the world to make it so. Okay? Now, some of us came in change. Some of us came in our own volition. We came from all over the world to make this a great nation. And we should be grateful to the people who have come here to help us build this nation wherever they came from. And whether they came here fleeing political persecution or famine or religious persecution, whatever the reason, or just more opportunity, whatever the reason, we should be grateful. So, thank you.
Thank you for that certainly topic dominating the news, and that's on top of your day job, right? I mean, there's so much going on in the county, not to mention that you're running for re-election again. So this is going to be a busy few months. It has been. We usually talk every now and then. We'll try to get you to talk for a bit after budget season. We always talk about how a budget is really a roadmap for your priorities politically and otherwise. You passed your budget recently. Let's start with what's the bulk of the budget. And like I said, we got six different issues at least that we could get to. But as far as I know, the bulk of the budget is healthcare, right, and public safety. Can we start there and maybe talk about your budget and what the plan is for your administration moving forward?
Sure. So the county has a $10.1 billion budget. Half of it is healthcare. And I'm grateful that Dr. Mikaitis and some of his folks are here. We're grateful for his leadership. Historically, Cook County provided healthcare, hands-on healthcare to people. We have two hospitals, Stroger and Provident. We have a dozen primary care clinics around the county. But in 2013, as a result of the opportunity created by President Obama in the Affordable Care Act, we started our own insurance program, our Medicaid Managed Care Program. So now we have both direct provision of care and an insurance program that covers people who may or may not get care in our system. We have, I think the last time I heard, 130-something partners, right? Neighborhood, not-for-profit clinics, you know, the University of Chicago, Northwestern, Sinai, I mean, the big academic hospitals, and a very large network of providers, and people can take their Medicaid insurance that we provide through county care and go to any of those providers and get care. That Medicaid managed care plan, county care, from 2013, most years, threw off revenue that supported the operations of our health and hospital system. So it was a benefit in lots of ways. It provided insurance to the people who needed insurance through Medicaid, but it also provided additional resources for us to directly deliver care. And at the moment, county care enrollment is close to 400,000 people in Cook County. We're the largest Medicaid managed care plan, and we have the highest ratings. Thank you very much. So, and I think the assumption is that public systems somehow can't do things as well as the private sector. Well, here's an example where we run an efficient, quality program that's highest ranked in the state and is the largest one in Cook County. So I'm really grateful to our health and hospital system for their good work. And we also focus some of our resources through the American Rescue Plan Act, the federal support for local governments during the pandemic and coming out of it. We use some of that money to help people with medical debt, because medical debt is the main reason that people declare bankruptcy in this country. And if you have medical debt, you're less likely to seek care when you need it, and it impacts your credit score. So it may impact your ability to get housing or employment, and it also, of course, as I said, impacts people's willingness to get more care. So we allocated, I think, $10 million. We've spent $6.5 million. We've eliminated medical debt for 600,000 people in Cook County, and it's $800 million in medical debt. And the reason you can eliminate $800 million in medical debt with $6.5 million is that the health and hospital systems, the physician groups, sell their medical debt to collection agencies for pennies on the dollar. And so we worked with a not-for-profit that had done some of this work with philanthropy. We were the first government entity to do it, to buy that medical debt from the private providers and then wipe it out, send people letters saying your medical debt has been wiped out. So we've always focused on health care, and we kind of added this effort to try to help people with medical debt as a result of the resources we got from the federal government under the American Rescue Plan Act. So that's half our budget. And in any given year, 25 to 30% is the criminal justice system. And that means the courts and the jails, basically. And historically, that's all we did, the courts and the jails. But when I became president, I said, this doesn't make sense. The courts and the jails are real far downstream. Why don't we go upstream and try to have fewer people in the criminal justice system? Well, one of the things we did immediately was focus on the number of people we had in the jail, 10,000 on a daily basis when I came into office. And a lot of those people were there because they couldn't afford even a nominal bail. So the rule was you had to pay 10%. So if your bail is $1,000, you pay $100. But there were people in jail who couldn't pay $100 in bail. So they spent days or weeks some waiting for the adjudication of their case because they didn't have even $100. So this is a system where if you were accused, I won't say you were accused of being a big-time drug dealer, or you were accused of a very serious crime, if you had enough money in your pocket, you could be out on the street. But poor people who didn't have resources ended up detained in our jail. And again, the county jails are for detention of people accused of crimes. Prisons are for people who are convicted of crimes. So our jail was holding people, many of them for low-level drug offenses, not paying their child support, shoplifting, and they stayed weeks in jail because they couldn't pay a nominal bond. In 2013, after spending almost three very difficult years trying to get the finances in order, which was our first, I always say it's your primary obligation as an executive, you got to have a strong financial base. We got the finances in order, and then we turned to criminal justice, and with the help of the Supreme Court, got all of the actors, the chief judge, the state's attorney, the public defender, the sheriff, and the clerk of the court, together meeting on a regular basis to figure out how we could improve our criminal justice system. In 2017, the chief judge issued an order that basically said liberty rather than detention should be the default in the courtroom. In other words, people should be presumed innocent and therefore not detained in jail until their trial. Now, that reduced reliance considerably on cash bond. And the state, bless them, several years later passed the Pretrial Fairness Act. And it was challenged by some downstate state's attorneys, but it went into effect in September of 2023, and it eliminated cash bond in the state of Illinois. We're the first state to eliminate cash bond, and we should all be proud of that fact. So I'm very grateful to all of the actors in the public safety arena. I began by saying we should look upstream, and then I started talking about the jail. Let's talk about upstream. So under my tenure, we didn't just support the public safety actors, and in the last decade, you should know we've virtually doubled their budget so that they are well-staffed and resourced to do their jobs. 10 years ago, their budgets collectively were $1 billion. As of this past year, they're $1.8 billion. So we've resourced them well. But we also have spent, in the last 4 years, $200 million supporting violence prevention, wraparound services for victims of gun violence, community violence interrupters, people out on the streets trying to keep single acts of violence from turning into domino effects and just a cycle of more violence. $200 million working with a lot of community-based organizations that do this very difficult, very important work. So we've invested more in the stakeholders in the criminal justice system, and we've also invested in communities to try, as I said, to go upstream a little bit and keep people from getting in the criminal justice system in the first place. So 25 to 30%, depending on the year, is our public safety budget. Half is healthcare, 25 to 30% is public safety. Now, the rest of the budget is all kinds of different things, everything from animal control to environment and sustainability to the medical examiner's office. But what I usually talk about is the third bucket is economic development, because I think as a county, as a state, as a city, the only way we're going to meet the challenges we face is to try to expand the economy. We can't. Thank you, Michael. Michael's leading the applause on that one. Thank you.
More to build, right, Michael?
So when I came into office, I had worked in the City of Chicago Department of Economic Development. And so when I came in the office, I want to talk to the head of the Bureau of Economic Development. And somebody cheerfully told me there is none. There is a Department of Planning and Development. There's a Capital Development Department. There's Building and Zoning. There's Workforce. But all of those departments were siloed, and they did not work together. There was no coordination. So I created a Bureau of Economic Development to bring them all together so we could have a comprehensive, cohesive plan for the county. And I'm very grateful to Soshi, who's here, who has helped us with that work. We appreciate it. Now, I have to say that we did sort of the traditional stuff, community development block grants to organizations to do affordable housing, to do development of community projects. But we had... and lots of affordable housing. But we hadn't helped small businesses. And the pandemic pushed us to understand that this was an area where we needed to step in. And we worked with business service organizations like the Illinois Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the Urban League, supported them during the pandemic as they often were struggling without resources, and also to provide money to them so that they could help support the small businesses that were in their networks. So we've spent a lot of time building a network of business support organizations to help small businesses and communities. And we've also made some big bets in economic development. The county pitched in with the state to support a flyover at 75th Street. A flyover is just a long bridge. In this case, I think it's 2.5 miles. because Cook County is a railroad hub. 5 of the 6 major railroads in this country come through Cook County. But there was a crossing where north, south, and east, west trains crossed. And, of course, that led to a lot of congestion, right? So in partnership with the railroads, the federal government, the state government, and the county, we built this very, very, very long bridge, which is called a flyover, to decongest our region and make it easier for rail traffic to get through. And railroads are critical to our economy. We usually think of highways and trucks, but rail is a much more efficient way to transport goods than trucking. I'm sorry if any of the truckers in the room. So we also contributed $20 million of county funds to the Psi Quantum project on the southeast side. This is the Illinois Quantum Microelectronics Park, IQMP. And I remember, and it's surprising to me, I will admit that I'm a graduate of the University of Chicago, and at one point, I was talking to President Zimmer, and he was effusive about quantum computing. Now, the University of Chicago at that point didn't even have an engineering department, but he was talking about quantum computing. This was at least a decade ago. And I, in one ear and out the other, I'm a history teacher. But then it comes back when I'm asked to be supportive of Psi Quantum in this microelectronics park, quantum computing, which I won't pretend to understand. But I'm told is the next big thing, that we as a country have to be at the forefront of the quantum computing enterprise. So we've made big bets on the railroads and big economic projects like that, as well as trying to support small businesses. So I usually, when I talk about what the county does, those are the things I talk about. I should mention here as well, since Commissioner Gaynor is here, as well as Jessica Caffrey, that one of the innovative things we've done to support economic development is the land bank. So this is an effort to take abandoned and vacant properties and put them back on the tax rolls. And the land bank has been very successful in building a core of smaller to mid-sized developers that are willing to work with us on renovating abandoned homes, taking abandoned properties and constructing new enterprises on them. And we've got to build, as I said at the beginning, we've got to build the tax base, and the land bank has been an important vehicle for doing that as well. So I've talked a lot about our basic
work. You hit all my topics.
I'm sure you have more questions. There we go.
Well, no, how about, so you, I mean, you've hit on most of, the other side of it is that's where you're spending the money, right? But how are you getting that? Some, like I said, you're up for election. We see ads on TV, and the budget has gotten significantly larger.
Right. Well,
how would you respond to that, and how are you protecting and keeping things affordable for everybody, as you mentioned, that needs every dollar they can spare?
Right. So the first thing I should say is the county has not raised property taxes in 15 years. Actually, it's longer than that. It's since like 1996. Is that right, Commissioner? But in my entire tenure as president of the county board, we haven't raised property taxes. And we haven't raised any taxes, I think, in the last 5 years or so. But we haven't raised any property taxes. Property taxes have risen because local school districts and municipalities in particular have them as their basic source of funding. We are in a state which is one of the most dependent on property taxes. And that's not a good thing, because property taxes are not as progressive as other kinds of taxes. So we're overly reliant on property taxes, and we have more units of government than any state in the country except Pennsylvania, and we have twice as many as Pennsylvania. So if you have lots of small units of government, that's an expensive way to get services delivered. But that's been the choice of the people of Illinois to have, I think it's 11,000 or something, I can't remember, units of government. So we're overly reliant on property taxes. We have lots and lots of units of government. So what have I done? We went to Springfield in the veto session and got past raising the ceiling on the senior freeze so that more seniors could stay in their homes. And we pushed back the date for the first property tax bill in 2026 to April rather than March 1st to give people a little more breathing room from the December date in which the second tax bills for 2025 were due. But again, the only way we're going to get, we're going to do better in terms of the reliance on property taxes is to build the economy, and I've talked about that already. So that has to be our long-term goal, supporting economic development in a variety of ways and contexts. It disturbs me when people are anti-development, because it's suicidal. I don't know how to say it any other way.
I think there are a lot of people in this room that would agree with you that are in that world of growing the economy, and it's often talked about up here in various ways. One other way and another topic we haven't touched on yet that we've talked about, I mentioned CTA. We've had a number of conversations about transit. There's a major overhaul in transit, and one of the a couple of the speakers mentioned how involved you were in making that a reality. Why is that? That historically isn't the job of the county, right, or the county president's office. Why is transit so important to you and to the county?
Well, if you're concerned about economic development, you have to have good public transit. Ordinary people have to have a way to get to work or to school or to their doctor's appointments or whatever. And that means you have to have a vibrant public transit system. And we were in big trouble here in Illinois. First of all, on the operational side, our transit agencies got support from the federal government to deal with the fall off in ridership during the pandemic. But that money runs out at the end of this year, end of 2026. So there, we kept talking about the fiscal cliff, and depending upon the moment, it varied somewhat. But the number that stuck with me was $750 million. That we needed just to support operations. And then, of course, there's this what's called the state of good repair, keeping up the train cars and the buses and whatever and turning over the rolling stock as it becomes obsolete. So it ended up being, the estimate was, $1.5 billion. So for 2 years in a row, I don't know if Aaron Alleman is here from Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, but the state legislature asked CMAP to do a report on transit in northeastern Illinois. They did that. I think it, don't hold me to this, I think it was December of 23 when they released it. Anyway, a couple years ago. And as soon as they did that and talked about the fiscal cliff and the need for resources and also the need for changing the way we governed transit. I asked my team in Springfield to work with the state legislature to get more resources and to change the governance structure so that we could have a reasonable, integrated transit system in northeastern Illinois. So we have the RTA, the Regional Transportation Authority, as kind of the umbrella, and then three service providers, CTA, PACE, and Metra. And the problem was that those service providers were all siloed and made decisions independently and sometimes not as thoughtfully as they might. I'll give you two examples. The CTA proposed extending the red line to 130th Street, and they crossed a metro line, but in the plan there was no intersection there. There was no opportunity for people to get off metro and get on the CTA or vice versa, get off the CTA and get on metro. So you have two transit lines that cross, and there's no way for people to get from one to the other. I had a conversation with Sandy Hart, the executive in Lake County, and she talked about PACE extending their service to Round Lake, to downtown Round Lake, and she went to the ribbon cutting and was talking to everybody. And it turns out that there's a metro station like five blocks from downtown, but PACE had not planned to extend their bus service to the metro line as well as downtown Round Lake. And again, entities were making decisions in their what they believed was their own best interest and the interest of hopefully the interests of their commuters. But there was no way to make them think about the intersection of their operations, right? So the plan that was passed both reorganized governance and provided additional resources, which I'm very grateful. And I should acknowledge Representative Evadina Delgado, who carried the most water on this. Cam Buckner, Representative Buckner, was her partner in the House, and Senator Vili Vallam in the Senate. I want to thank all of them for their good work. We all appreciate it. And it was passed in the veto session. I wouldn't have bet a lot on our success, but you know, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the blessings that come our way.
Great. And I think those are some of the folks that mentioned your name as being instrumental in that. Okay, I want to go back to a minute. All right, we've got a few minutes, and hopefully I can get to a question or two from the audience. I'd like to go back to public safety, criminal justice. You know, it's never enough, but there's been some success lately. You mentioned community violence, CVI. Community violence interrupters, you mentioned, you know, obviously the Safety Act and the jail system. There's also trends nationally, crime's down. You know, we have that's good news. It's never enough, but it's down. What do you see as the real cause for that? I mentioned a couple of things. Is it ICE coming in and saving, you know, cities and counties from bad guys? How is crime going down to the levels of that we haven't seen in a long time?
Well, first of all, you have to acknowledge the national trends. Crime is going down. It was a spike, carjackings in particular, but violent crime went up dramatically in March of 2020 when we shut down the economy, basically, right? So there was that spike in 2020, but since the pandemic has waned, so have crime statistics across the board, but particularly violent crime. And you should all know that in the last 4 years in Cook County, violent crime is down 50%. Okay, in the last 4 years in Cook County, crime is down 50%. And I think there are a lot of reasons that we've had particular success. One of which is that the state and the city and the county came together, what's called GASC, the Government Alliance for Safe Communities. So everybody had money that they were spending on violence prevention. And what GASC did was bring everybody together to look at how we were spending the money and to try to be as strategic and effective with those resources as we possibly could, to avoid duplication, to be sure that we were funding the most effective programs. To look at the data of what programs were working and which weren't. So the Government Alliance for Safe Communities brought government together. And I want to thank the philanthropic and the business community. the Commercial Club, the Civic Consulting Alliance. I think I saw
Rebecca
here.
Is here.
Rebecca and Frank Beal, from the Civic Consulting Alliance. They mobilized the business community to match the government contributions to the violence reduction work. And so not only do we have government working together to be sure that our expenditures were effective, but we had the support of the business and philanthropic community. And I think that has been the reason that we have been even more successful than the rest of the country in bringing down crime. And that that's a blessing to all of us. Because if we don't have safe communities, people don't want to live here, right? And what we focused on with the resources are those communities that are most impacted by violence, because violence is not equally distributed across the county. Of course, there's some communities where they struggle more with violence than others, and so that's where we've concentrated our efforts to try to be sure that we're meeting the needs of the community residents and supporting folks who come out of prison or jail so that they can have a better arc for their life, and so that young people who may be engaged in bad behavior are brought to some alternative programs and hopefully helped with wraparound services to get their lives turned around. So,
can we switch gears to politics for a couple minutes?
Okay.
And you are, first of all, you're running for re-election. Secondly, you're the chair of the Cook County Democratic Party, correct? So we could, again, go in 100 directions here. Let's start with the county, with your position as the chair of the Cook County Democratic Party. You have, over the years, you've trained and brought to politics and to the city and the state a whole host of leaders, the mayor of Chicago, the former state's attorney, Commissioner Lowry, others that you've mentored and brought to public service. How is our future looking in who you're seeing come to the next generation of leadership? And how do you see the Cook County Democratic Party, but also public service in the state, city, and county over the next few years? And as I always say, feel free to drop names if you see any shiny stars.
In 1996, I supported a young community organizer who wanted to be a state senator. So he came to see me, and I said, he was very impressive, said I would support him. He won that Senate seat and went on to be president of the United States. So I'm...
You picked a couple winners.
So I'm a teacher by profession. So my view of the world is we have to nurture and support the next generation of leaders, next generation of folks who are going to make change in the world. And I'm proud of the fact that I've spent a lot of time trying to help younger folks who are interested in politics be public servants. I'm not going to talk about anybody in particular.
Okay.
But I'll just say this. You know, I became chair of the party following Joe Berrios. I continued on with his effort to make the people that we supported in the party as diverse as the county, because we hadn't done a very good job of that prior to Joe's tenure. Frankly, he became chair of the party in 2010. In the last cycle, 60% of the people that we had slated, that we asked the public to support, were women, and 60% were people of color. So I'm very proud of the fact that we have, as a party, have taken a very inclusive view of who would be a good leader, whatever office they're running for. And so I guess what I would say is I've worked hard to try to bring into the party and into leadership positions people from the diverse communities that are represented in the county itself.
Sure. And I'd take a moment. There are 5 congressional seats, right, that are
right.
Open. Now, there are others that... With incumbents, but to have 5 congressional seats, in and around Chicago, and it was encouraging to me as I looked through the candidates that so many of them, some are in the room, so many of them are young. I don't know what young is anymore, but
younger than you.
Yeah, well, sure. Future.
That's most
leaders.
Of the people in this room, right?
uh, I was trying to figure out how we do this because there's so many candidates, and that was very encouraging to me. These are folks, some who are elected, some are who are in business. But talk for a minute, if you would, about those five seats, what that means to, I mean, that's a lot of turnover, for better or worse. You know, we lose seniority as a state in committees and all of that, but we've got some new blood coming into politics in Illinois. What do those congressional seats mean, and are you spending much time focusing on that?
Okay. I'm not sure it's smart for me to say this, but anyway... So as chair of the party, my goal is to try to get the people we've slated elected. Okay? That's my job. To the extent that I support people outside of our slated candidates who are running for Congress, because we don't slate for Congress, or for state senator or state representative or whatever, I alienate all the other people who I'm not supporting, right? And in many of these races... I think there were like 19 candidates for Jan Schakowsky's seat or something like that. In many of these races, there are just numerous candidates. And so I have tried very hard to stay out of all of it as chair of the party, because my principal job is to hold people together to support our slated candidates. The one exception I made in the congressional races is for my own state senator, Robert Peters, who's running in the second congressional. But other than that, I haven't endorsed in the congressional races, and I've tried to pretty much stay out of everything else. As I said, just because I'm chair of the party, and I've got this primary obligation to support our slated candidates.
And how about Senate?
The party did not take a position in that race, and neither have I.
Okay. So you're not going to make any news here today?
No.
On that front?
No, I will not make any news today on that front.
You're welcome
front.
To. Okay.
That's okay. That's okay.
How about your race? You're running.
Yes.
This will be your fourth... get my facts straight. Will this be your fourth term?
Fifth, actually.
Fifth. It is your fourth. Okay, will be your fifth term if you win this election. How is it looking?
All right, look, I think I'm going to win the election. But elections, campaigns are... a grind. It's not just that the days are long, but you have to be up all the time, smiling and confident and warm, and it gets annoying.
I think last time you were here, I asked you very specifically about your own mental health. You know, we talk a lot about mental health. So you got people telling you what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, every which way, every day of the week, and you gave a pretty good answer. You talked about some movies, right, that you watch. So hopefully you're able
Netflix,
to take your mind off
that.
Of when not being on all of the time. But that election is coming. That primary is in March,
right?
We're seeing ads. You know, it's getting a little nasty. But I've always taken a page out of your book, and you come here regularly. We don't usually do this as City Club during primary season, but is that something that we should be doing, is hearing from your opponent on ideas that he has that may be different from some of yours?
Well, you know, I think the City Club is a great place for people to get information and to share ideas. In a democracy, these civic spaces are really critical. Yes.
So we're gonna work on that. I know we don't have too many days before March, but we at City Club, we're not biased, we're not partisan. You know, we very much appreciate your leadership over so many years. You have shown up again and again and again. We will continue to invite you to do so, and appreciate you answering these questions, some more difficult than others. My favorite question then. Depending on everything, how will you come back soon?
Well, I asked Kara in our communications department. I asked her when I was here last, and I guess it was I didn't make it last year. So this is the first. It's been a year, so it won't be a year before I come back again. How's that?
You're always welcome. thank you. There's so much more to come. There's so much more to see from you and your leadership and folks that you have helped nurture. I wanted to make it a point to mention that, because that is the future, and so many people in this room, I believe, can and do step up and can be sitting in this seat someday like you have done for so many years and under such great circumstances of leadership at Cook County. There's so much more to come here at City Club, as I mentioned. We have plenty of sold-out programs, but please put your name on the wait list, sign up, renew your membership. We've got lots more to come. I have a couple more program ideas based on what you and I just talked about today.
Okay.
So I may be following up on that. Please come back. Please keep an eye out for all the good that's coming and all the good that our speaker today has shared with us. Thank you, Madam President Toni Preckwinkle. Welcome back to City Club anytime.
Thank you.